right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of 7-Minute Scaling Secrets, where we interview entrepreneurs and learn a secret on how they scale up their businesses. Today, we have another special guest, Ganesh Mahendranathan, entrepreneur, innovator, biohacker. Ganesh, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
This episode was brought to you by Superscaling. Join the Superscaling Ignite program today and learn how you can systemize and superscale your business so that your revenues can grow to at least $100,000 a month with a productive team from all over the world, raving fans as clients and happy founders who have true freedom. Visit superscaling.com/ignite today. And now back to the episode.
Thanks, Alvin. Thanks for a fine introduction. I think it's a great initiative that you've launched. Myself, personally, at the moment, I head up group innovation at RHB Bank. It's a local bank in Malaysia. We're the first agile bank, actually, in Southeast Asia. And prior to that, I was in the startup and scale-up industry. I started off my career in actually professional services at PwC and KPMG. And then it's been startups. And now I'm in a corporate environment driving that entrepreneurship within the organization.
Wow, cool. What, like, tell me how you got started in entrepreneurship. And I think like the audience wants to know, how did Ganesh become an entrepreneur?
So I think, you know, I think for me, back in school, I think the goal was always, you know, I come from humble beginnings. You know, dad was a government servant, mom was a housewife. It was all about getting scholarships. I remember my SPM results came out. I had 11 A1s, 1 B3. And then because of that little B3, I couldn't get any overseas scholarship. And yeah, I mean, you know, there's just
tough
challenges. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and my dreams of doing physics at Oxford, you know, went down the drain. And I had a local scholarship at Nilai. So I went there and I remember having, you know, students that had 2 A's, were sharing the same class. And I went through a bit of depression. And I remember talking to my brother and I'd recently read 4-Hour Work Week. And he was like, you know, just be the biggest fish in, even if it's a small pond, right? So, you know, I felt academics is quite easy. And that's when I got into entrepreneurship. I started like, how do I make money? I didn't want to rely on, you know, anyone to save my own money. So I started tutoring. I started, you know, doing assignments, and it was intellectually dishonest, but, you know, you have to do what you have to do back then.
Dude, I did that too, man. Guilty.
You know, I rented cars as well. We rent cars by the month and then rented out daily, you know, maybe the full sales acquisition channels. At one point, we were managing 7 MyVs, you know. So that's how it started. You know, we saved a bunch of money, and I didn't actually go for my graduation. You know, even though I was valedictorian, I missed it because I saved a big chunk of money to go on my first Euro trip, first time outside Malaysia and Singapore. So I think that was quite an experience. That's what entrepreneurship taught me, you know, like working on the side, having a side hustle, driving and doing the things that you want to do. So for me, that was the journey, that how it started.
Awesome. And tell me a little bit more. Right now, you are in innovation. Innovation is the thing that you are all about right now. Like, what's innovation? What does that mean to somebody? And how do entrepreneurs benefit from that?
Exactly. So I think, you know, innovation has been thrown around a lot. You know, people talk about radical, disruptive. You know, so I think the first step, I think coming to an organization that's 100 years old and we're trying to keep up with the big boys, I think the first step was really understanding, having a unified understanding of what innovation means. So exactly. I think in your teams, it's essential that everyone, you know, has that, right? So for sake of a framework, we use the Gary Pisano framework, where, you know, look at innovations across 4 segments, you know, incremental, disruptive, radical, architectural, right? So one part is, what is the change in the business model, or whether you're applying new technology to grow your business. So defining that is really critical, because then you can map out your initiatives across the journey. You want to spend, there's a rule of thumb, right? There's 2 theories. One is the Google 70-20-10 rule. Another is the McKinsey's 3 horizons of growth, right? When it comes to innovations. So when you look at your company, you have all these big plans, right? But when you want to structure your initiatives, you want to have at least 70% focus on incremental innovation, things that you can do, quick wins that can dramatically improve your efficiencies. At the same time, you also want to look at some medium-term innovations, and you want to have a long-term horizon. These are things that, you know, takes a longer time to you know, mature, right? So I think that is one way. And once you've cascaded, once you have a unified understanding of what it means, and you want to look into types of innovation, right? So you can look up Dublin's 10 types of innovation, whether it's from organizational structure, whether it's from a network innovation, brand, new way of engaging a customer's process. Because by doing so, you don't limit innovation right. just to your tech teams and product teams. It cuts okay. across every part of the business, whether it's customer service, events, etc.
Nice. So you must have dealt with like innovation in various forms across various businesses and industries. What's yeah. one particular form or example of innovation that you've seen that has particularly like maybe struck you or is more notable? Something that you can share with the audience maybe?
So I think it could be one like, you know, I'll give you one simple example. We had one of the winners for our, so we have an internal Dragon's Den where we introduced like a variable bonus of 6 months on top of your normal bonus to incentivize people to come up with ideas, get it funded, bring it to market, deliver results. And that 6 months is paid over three tranches as you achieve each milestone. So one of the winners was from a homeowner squad, and their solution was, you know, they did some research on first-time home buyers, and they realized the time it takes for you to even consider buying a home to the time you actually sign the dotted line is 2 years. That's the average time. So it's really long. Of course, for second-time home buyers, you know, the turnaround time is much faster. And given that COVID had just happened, there's a lot of uncertainty in the job climate, all of that. So ultimately, we designed a solution which was offering 100% buyback guarantee for any first-time home buyers that lose their job within the first 24 months, right? So you have the property developer will buy it back from you, right? And what we intend to do is to give them the confidence to take that step towards home ownership and knowing that, you know, if things don't work out, you have an exit strategy. That's just one example of which we went through the whole design, and that's one innovation that came up.
So the entrepreneur or the business basically went through a framework to actually arrive at this.
The framework is called design thinking, right?
Design thinking.
So how we do it, I mean, it's very typical. I mean, you have so many different names for design thinking. Hasselblad Institute in Germany. In Japan, you have KTC. Swiss, you have Swisscom. IBM has Loop. Of course, D Stanford has their five methods is the same, right? You start off by first understanding, and then you want to ideate, and then you want to test, and then you want to track, right? So the way we look at it, they come to us, we have a design challenge. What is the challenge you want to talk about? What are the key problems and the key user personas that you want to identify, right? Then you build out a discussion guide in terms of, okay, what do I want to talk to them about? You know, you go talk to them, come back, analyze these insights, form a point of view, and you further define your problem statements using a how might we framework. From there, you move into ideation, do a bit of dot voting, get some consensus. Then you then prioritize your ideas using a prioritizing matrix based on value versus effort, right? And then you can start bucketing that into like a sort of a backlog, right? These are the things. Wow. Then, of course, once you narrow down the solution, you build a prototype, you test it out with the users, come back, build a business case, and then you pitch it like a VC-style pitch deck, right? And then you get funding, and then you bring it to market. But what we've done to make it even more wholesome is not just have, it's meant to be a transformative journey, right? Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, we teach them breeding techniques, you know, box breeding, right, before wow. presentation, right? We teach them IDOAD framework, how to run meetings more effectively, right? Having intention, clear desired outcomes, how do you deploy a RASi template, how to organize a data room, across the board, you know, we talk about emotions, talk about their lives, what is their why. And what I've seen is it's transformative. You know, people, and talking to your customers, there are people that have been at the bank 12, 15 years, hadn't spoken to a customer in 2 years,
yeah.
like in person. And I think that is something people forget as you grow big.
Yeah.
So growing, you should never lose that. Always talk to your customers.
Man, I love that. I think that's a great reminder. And that's the kind of things that I tell my clients as well at Superscaling when I coach them about entrepreneurship. Because a lot of times when we start businesses, yes, you know, it requires a lot of risk taking. It requires a lot of courage and guts. And sometimes we just got to go with how we feel, right? Just take that leap of faith. The problem is when we start growing, the things that you mentioned, everything from structuring how you think to maybe like, you know, even like coming up with systems that get us to do the things that came naturally before, such as talking to our customers, such as, you know, spending time actually looking at whether our solution is even being customer centric or not. These are all things that start becoming like lost once the business starts to grow. And I love the fact that you brought like, you know, structure to the chaos that is entrepreneurship, because a lot of businesses can benefit from this. Even if it's not a business at large, it might be teams that could benefit from this process.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Yeah. How, in terms of innovation then, like how you mentioned two forms of innovation. Innovation that comes from like within a team, is that considered innovation as well? Like when you have a team within a business, can a team be innovative even though the business is not?
Absolutely, right? I mean, so when you say the business is not innovative, are you referring to a traditional kind of business?
Yeah. What if the business itself, you know, might not necessarily be innovative? It could be a traditional SME, it could be a conventional business, but maybe the business has lost its way. But what happens if a team inside a business, either because of a specific mandate from the upper management or from, say, foresight of the team leader, decides to introduce innovation? Can that still happen though? Because the other way is more common, where the business decides to be innovative. Can a team within a business be innovative?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I think definitely it can be done, right? But ideally it has to start top down, and that's where the agile transformation needs to happen first. Right. You know, once people are self-organized and into like, you know, tribes. So the way we do it at RHB, we have certain tribes that look into specific customer journey. So your job is to just look at this end-to-end customer journey. Let's say, so we have under, you know, under assets, you have secured assets. Under secured assets, you have auto finance and homeowners, right?
Yeah.
I would look at first-time home buyers. And those teams are organized in a way that is multidisciplinary. Right, so you have your core team members, and you also have someone embedded from marketing, you have someone embedded from operations and process, and that is key for you to be able to ensure speed to market, right? Because you have to worry about talking to folks from different
portfolios. Yeah, I love it, man. Stakeholder management involved.
Yeah.
Man, I think that's something that is a set truth of businesses, either, you know, entrepreneurship or like in business in general. I ask this question because I have clients who have to work with partners who might be businesses that are traditional, and you know, sometimes they move a bit slowly, either because of upper management or because that's just the way things are in a business. But they have great teams that sometimes can be a lot more innovative and can be a lot more driven. Yeah, but I think like what you said, innovation has to come from top down to really be embraced and to really be supported within the organization. Yeah, cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Ganesh, we have two questions. Number one, the first question, what is the most important habit to be a successful entrepreneur?
That's a great question, you know, when it comes to habit. And I think it goes before the habit. You know, I think the habit is the byproduct once you've sort of understood what your core values are. You know, you can do a simple values test, understand what your strengths and weaknesses are, perhaps do an Enneagram or an MBTI. Once you've mapped out those data points, then what I would strongly advise is to then look into the different facets of life, right? Whether it's health and fitness, intellectual, emotional, financial, relationships across the board, and really identify what is the ideal state that you'd like to achieve across these dimensions, right? And so that at least you come to a point where, you know, let's say your focus is on your company, but at the same time, you want to ensure that your relationship does not get affected, which might affect business as well, right?
Absolutely.
So by having a clear understanding of that, you can then create sort of goals via OKRs, quarterly OKRs, which can then be cascaded down to your habits. So that is where, so for me, like my thing, I've identified five things that helps me have a better emotional and physical state, right? And I realized keeping my place tidy has a huge impact on my emotional and physical state. Stretching or working out really helps a lot.
Right.
Talking to my close family and friends 3 to 5 times a week. I mean, this stock catching up with Alvin, I mean, this is one of it. I'm going to get a huge rush after this that's going to help me through my day. And what are the other two? Staying hydrated, extremely important. And of course, I realized this where I fast. I do intermittent fasting like 24. I have exceptional clarity, wow. You know, and that is, of course, tied to a proper supplement stack, which is a conversation for another day.
Yeah, I bet. I bet we can spend hours on that topic. I love that because you've actually have a structured thinking around like habit. I think sometimes people come from an angle of just like adopting something that works for another individual, and that's where the problem comes. We don't know what their objectives are. We don't know what their intents are. We don't know what their constraints are. And we apply things blindly to ourselves, we get lost, right? Things don't work the same way. And that's where problems tend to happen. Cool. That's a great answer. And now the second question, what advice would you give to another business owner?
One advice, I mean, depends on what stage of business owners. I think if you're at an early stage, I think the first thing is having difficult conversations early on, formalizing partnership agreements off the bat. So I've been down that wrong. I've been down that path in a negative way, you know. Ensure proper check and balance. There's no best friends in business. Business friendships should be kept separate. And I think aside from that is, I think a key advice would be to continuously iterate, really review, you know, your customer journey. Look into ethnographic research is something fantastic where you view your customers in a natural state, right? Wow. And I realize most business owners do not do sufficient qualitative research, which for me is like a little bit of that extra work at the start. You know, otherwise it's garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
You don't want to build something you think they want, right? And something what they say is contradicted what they do. Yeah. You know, so I think that is something I would. There's two pieces of advice.
Oh man, I love that because that's so you, right? You're so on brand, so Ganesh. All throughout the conversation, it's all structured thinking, having frameworks around everything, not just business, right? But even your personal life. And I guess that's why you're a biohacker. That's why you're an innovator. That's why you're an entrepreneur, right? You can start to see like all the cogs and the logic in Ganesh's brain just working. Thank you so much for your time, Ganesh. Tell us, if the audience wants to find out more about Ganesh, wants to follow up with Ganesh, how best can they do that?
I mean, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. My name Ganesh Mahendranathan. You can find me there or Instagram, whichever you guys are comfortable with. Just drop me a DM and I'll try my best to get in touch and respond as soon as I can.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. That was another episode of 7 Minutes Scaling Secrets. If you guys like this, please remember to like, comment, share this episode with somebody who might appreciate it. And I look forward to see you guys on the next one.